Welcome back, everybody, to the Comedy Castle podcast. I'm your host, Joel Fragomeni. I'm going to tell you what's going on this week at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle in Royal Oak, Michigan. That's the place. You probably knew that when you clicked on it, though, didn't you? Yeah, you did. Anyway, welcome back to the show. Big week at the Comedy Castle. We got a whole bunch of different things going on starting tonight, September 10th, as I'm putting this show up on the internet. The Detroit to L.A. Comedy Challenge is tonight. It's one of the beginner rounds. I've talked about it in the past. A bunch of amateur comedians come in, and they tell you jokes, and you can vote for who you think the funniest is. There's also a judge's vote, which I will try to do my best to be fair and with who I think is the funniest person. A lot of good people in this, too. Smata Adams, Bo Lerner, all former students of mine, Sarah Markey, so Big Mama. One of my favorites is Big Mama, but I'm not going to vote for Big Mama unless she has a great set tonight. So there you go. Comedy Challenge, that's tonight at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $10. Get those on comedycastle.com as you get the rest of these. And then we got a open mic night on the 11th on Wednesday here, 7:30 p.m. Always a good time at open mic night, so come out to that one if you want to get in cheap and laugh at a whole bunch of different people. Always got a good lineup at open mic night as well. And then Thursday, we got a special one-night show with Horace H.B. Sanders, Detroit's own. This guy, a reputation, one of the best and funniest comics from Detroit. He was a Star Search comedy champion a few years ago on CBS, and he, unbelievable talent this guy is. I've worked with him many, many times. Works clean, too. You want to see a funny, clean show? Thursday, September 12th, come see Horace H.B. Sanders, along with a couple buddies of mine, Nick Pizzuti opening, and Sal D'Amelio in the middle. What a great lineup for a Thursday. Come on. You can't beat that one. Of course, our headliner this weekend is doing the Friday and Saturdays, and that's guy named Trey Crowder, who I talk to and who I really like. Trey Crowder, I'll tell you more about that interview in a second, but Trey is performing for us on Friday, the 13th of September at 7:15 and 9:45, and then we got Saturday shows at 7 p.m. and 9:30 with Trey, and a great, great dude. I enjoyed talking to him. He's got a great story, which we'll get into. But again, comedycastle.com for all of those tickets. And as I always say, that Saturday night, 7 o'clock, that's the one people want to go to. You might want to get on those. We're selling tickets. He's moving tickets. He's moving inventory. But I really like this guy. He's a big fan. The Liberal Redneck. That might be how you know Trey, if you've never heard of Trey before. Guy grew up in the South. He'll tell us his whole story in a few minutes here on the podcast. But but liberal. And he'll tell us how he grew up and where he grew up. It was very poor and it was not liberal, but he was. And what influenced him? His dad owning a video store, he says, is a big part of that. And he just got some great stories, you know, a town with no stoplights. You'll find out what happened when they put in the stoplights. I thought that was really funny. He'll tell you about, his cooking. He does cooking videos on YouTube, which I thought were really funny and entertaining for a guy who you wouldn't think could cook Italian food. I watched him do it. He'll tell us a story that's in his current YouTube special about the QAnon shaman and his bit about that, which is hilarious. And the guy's made quite a name for himself. He's been on Real Time with Bill Maher, WTF with Mark Maron. I watched him interviewed by Al Franken as I was preparing to do this, and just tons and tons of shows. And really get making a name for himself with politics, which normally, and I think you hear me say it in the interview, normally they tell young comedians, don't do politics, it's too divisive. But here's Trey, a guy from the South, thick Southern accent, being liberal and making a name for himself and really starting to move tickets all over. So it's great to have him at the Comedy Castle this weekend. What else can I tell you about this interview? You'll hear some of my stories about what happened when I went to the South. I did not have the success that Trey has had. Maybe that's why I'm hosting the show. I don't know. But Trey's great. You'll love him. Let's throw it to that, all right? And we'll come back and talk a little bit after that. Here's Trey Crowder, everybody. Hey. Ladies and gentlemen, on the other end of my line, it's a privilege and an honor to speak to a man who's, I think, very busy with this time of year. Trey Crowder, welcome back to the Comedy Castle. Well, actually, you have not been to the Comedy Castle, or have you?
No, actually, I do believe I have, but it's been a long time. It's probably like 2017 or something like that.
Okay, so yeah.
Can I believe was 7 years ago? But here we are.
Here we are, man. And coming in, and as you know, people know you as the liberal redneck this time of year. To get even this amount of time with you, I feel privileged.
Yeah, sure. Well, anything for the Comedy Castle. Yeah, anything for you guys. So, yeah, let's... Happy to be here. Let's get into it.
Yeah, like I said, it's politics being sort of the thing that, would you say the politics thing made you popular? People, you know, when people, I've been reading bios of you, say 2016 was your breakthrough year when everyone was looking at you, listening to what you had to say.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I mean, it was kind of, I'm always like, you know, I'm from a really small redneck town in Tennessee, and I've always been politically, you know, progressive or left leaning or whatever. But as a comedian, you know, I did and still do all kinds of other stuff. And in 2016, one thing I was, you know, just trying out, because as a comic, you try a lot of things out, was, you know, trying to make a internet series about, you know, the character of the liberal redneck. Because it's weird to people now, but in 2016, that was like kind of just a funny idea.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because I used to do that in front of, like, you know, Southern comedy club audiences and stuff. I'd do a bit based around that, and like even conservatives would laugh at it because I think they were like, that's such a silly premise that would ever be a thing. But
what
then,
a character.
Exactly. Stretch. I mean, that's, you know, really kind of how it was. And then then those like blew up, and I went from, you know, I'd been doing stand up for like 6 years at that point, but then overnight, you know, now all of a sudden I can sell tickets and have a following and all this stuff. And so I got kind of married to the politics on the internet. But again, they're all my actual beliefs anyway. So fine. It was kind of weird. I never really before that, I never would have categorized myself as like a political comedian or anything.
Yeah.
But you know,
and I would think, and you know, I teach comedy classes myself with the club. I think you're told as a young comedian, maybe stay out of politics, too divisive. You're turning off half the audience. And so maybe you stayed away from it for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, I used to. Well, see, here's another thing that's weird about the shift in the comedy landscape and everything, but also just my perspective. Coming up in East Tennessee is like, you know, my comedy hometown where I lived was Knoxville, but also like Chattanooga, Nashville, Atlanta, just that general region. And back then, and you know, 2010, 2011, doing any kind of like even liberal-ish stuff or whatever was like, you know, was real edgy, was really pushing the envelope and that type of thing. And so, I mean, yeah, it was like, it was understood that there was kind of a danger to it, but I used to, you know, I used to like that, like trying to get a crowd, you know, at the Comedy Catch in Chattanooga with me by kind of, you know, making fun of the Bible or whatever it might be. And then now all these years later, it's got, it's a totally different kind of context and vibe to it. It feels like it's gone the other way. But I always talked about just all kinds of other stuff too. You know, my life, my kids, my marriage, where I'm from, my hometown, growing up poor, all that stuff. And I still do in my stand up cover a lot of that same, you know, still talk about those same things. It's not just, you know, politics.
Right. And when you talk about where you're from, I mean, how rural are we talking Tennessee? How poor? What, you know, would you, because some people, you hear them, they're farmers and they're actually rich people because they're farmers. But
No. That's the thing. Like, I guess if we had a couple of farmers in my hometown, they probably would have been classified as some of the people with money, but no, in my hometown, it's called Salina, Tennessee.
Okay.
It's incredibly rural and incredibly poor ever since the factory left in the 90s and just brutalized the whole town. It's actually the Oshkosh Bagosh factory.
Okay. Yeah.
Got the most whimsically named corporation to ever devastate an entire community, I believe. But, we have no traffic lights, no McDonald's. Wow. You know, my dad used to tell me they tried to install some traffic lights on the town square in the 80s, but that didn't take because people kept shooting them out in the middle of the night. So like, it's that kind of place. But yeah, I graduated with like 60 other kids, and we're the biggest class I'd ever had. They normally graduate. There's one high school in the whole county, and it typically graduates 30 to 40 kids a year. So I mean, it's tiny.
Yeah.
No jobs, high unemployed, you know, ravaged by pills, a lot of fun, humorous stuff. but yeah, it's that kind of place.
You're the most famous guy probably it's ever from Salina, right? I would think.
I mean, depends on who you ask there. You know, they're not everybody there is super proud of me. You know what I mean? It's also like, like on your way into town, there's that, you know, welcome to Salina, home of the 1997 U.S. Marbles champion, you know, like that. And also the world record smallmouth bass was caught in our lake. So those are, they're way more proud of those two facts.
Well, you give them time. Give them, see if they come around. Yeah. I liked, in fact, you put on your, I liked on your Instagram, in your bio there, the blood trader.
Yeah. Renowned blood trader. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm very self-aware. The thing is, like, I always was like this, like even back then in high school and stuff. But again, it's like the things were just different. Like I was the, you know, kind of commie weirdo or whatever in school, but it didn't make me any kind of pariah or nothing. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't as like divided as it is now. It was okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I wasn't on the same page as everybody else. Like, again, people found it odd.
Yeah,
I
might get into some
drunken arguments around a bonfire, but nothing like nothing vicious or anything. And now it's just a whole different world out there now. Right. It feels like people are just madder in general, which is a shame.
And then how do you end up doing stand-up comedy?
So I grew up in my dad, when I was a kid, my dad ran the video store in town.
Okay. Yeah.
Crowder's Video. Remember those relics of a bygone
era? I'm that age. Very,
very 90s. You know, it was a converted single wide trailer in tiny town. So we were the only like video store. And I grew up in that. So, like, all I ever, and my dad was, of course, big movie buff and everything. So, all I really wanted to do was, you know, Hollywood. I wanted to do Hollywood stuff. I wanted to do entertainment industry stuff when I was being a little kid. And then when I was like a teenager, it crystallized into stand-up specifically. The story I always tell is I remember watching Chris Rock's Bigger and Blacker live with my dad when it aired on HBO. And I was like 12 years old. My dad was a single father. That's the special where Chris Rock has that whole thing about like everybody talks about mama. Nobody gives a damn about daddy. All daddy gets is the big piece of chicken, all that stuff. And it's just wrecking my dad, you know, he's just loving it. And I think that, and that's when I was like, you know, I like that. I want to try to do that. And you know, and so that was when the seed was planted, but I was in the middle of nowhere and even went to college, still in the middle of nowhere in a Cal college. So I didn't really start. I didn't start until I was 24 after I got out of there and moved to Knoxville in 2010.
Yeah.
I'd been thinking about it and keeping notes and ideas and stuff for years before that.
That's good. Knoxville's. I have a brother that moved to Atlanta from Detroit, so I would try when I was touring, try to do the South as much as I could. I did a one nighter in Chattanooga one time.
Yeah,
and it was a weird place. It was sort of a bar upstairs, and then downstairs they had country line dancing.
Oh, okay. And all right, so you were at the Comic Catch. Do you remember what it was called?
I don't remember what it was called. I was there once. And I, you know, it was one of those places you got the vibe, like, it might not have been there very long.
Right, yeah.
Like, it's a
thing
they tried.
The two main places I know in Chattanooga are the club, the Comedy Catch, and there's also a popular, like, bar alt show spot called JJ's Bohemia.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been it. That wouldn't have been it. That sounds way better. Both of those sound way better than what I did. Let's put it that way.
But, you know, it'd be hit or miss. I mean, I wonder what your experience was with the South, because, like, you know, people would come down from up north, usually like New York comics and stuff, and they wouldn't even be political, but they would like struggle in some of these clubs because they're just very, you know, New York-y or very city-fied or just very, you know, Yankee-ish, whatever you want to call it. And like, so even though I was, even though I would get into some like, you know, whatever, more subversive stuff or whatever, I sounded like them and everything.
Right,
they immediately identified me as like being one of them.
Yeah.
So I had a longer lead because people think that a lot. They're like, God, it must have been brutal for you coming up where you did, but it really wasn't. Yeah. And I think that's a big part of the reason why is I definitely had a, if I had been a New York comic saying half the stuff I was saying, I mean, it never would have worked. I would have gotten booed off stage, but they gave me more grace because I don't sound.
Yeah, I felt, you know, as an Italian guy from Detroit, I definitely felt like people were looking at me like I was a Martian or something in the South. At least, right. at least in Chattanooga, I would do like the Atlanta punchline, and it was great. You know, sure. It was hard. Atlanta's hardly the South, you know, really at that point. And most of those people are, you know, from the North, a lot of them. So, right. You know, that was like being at home. But yeah, some of these towns, Chattanooga, and some of these, I did some Comedy Zone stuff and Asheville, North Carolina. Didn't go great for me.
Right. Well, I mean, they are the clubs in the South. They are very hit or miss in that way. Some of the clubs in the South are you know, red as hell and real. Yeah. It's like, you know, country people, very Southern. And then other clubs in the South are, yeah, in more metropolitan areas. It's not really like that at all. You know, so it just depends.
I did a place. This might have been the Asheville place. Again, another one nighter. I believe instead of a stool on stage, there was a saddle. I'm not making this up, man. It was.
Yeah, well, that's fun. That's folksy. It's inviting.
Wasn't place really great.
Drunk lady riding a mechanical bull in the back. Yeah, that's, people are watching that than watching you.
Yeah, it's it was some stuff, man. I know a little bit of what that's like, and certainly, I was certainly out of my comfort zone there a little bit, but. Let's talk about a few other things. You know, I first of all, as an Italian, I brought that up. The carbonara making, I thought, was terrific. I'm giving you a huge thumbs up as a first generation American, my friend.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, because, you know, in that video, I like to jab. I had it in my special that's currently out on YouTube called Damn Boy. There's like a bit in it about where I kind of go make fun of different types of Europeans a little bit. And I like to do that because it's like, because I just feel like I have a right to, because I'm from like the most mocked type of white person. You know what I mean? Like, you know, hillbillies or rednecks or whatever. So I feel like if anybody's allowed to give it back to like the Italians or the French or any other type of white people, you know, I'll take any opportunity to, you know, jab them a little bit. So, yeah, I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, it was great. You're quite a cook, I think. Based on that video.
Yeah, that's probably my biggest hobby. I mentioned I was raised by a single father. I mean, bless his heart. Yeah. When him and my mom split up, he couldn't boil water. And he, you know, he worked hard to like figure it out, you know, to like to cook for us everything. And I think it was kind of classic single dad stuff. He got to a point where like he had a roster of like four or five things he could reliably do kind of well, you know, like spaghetti and chili and like, roasted chicken and that type of thing. And I just, when I was a teenager, I got, you know, I was a fat kid and I got tired of that. And I was like, I'm gonna take this into my own hands. So I started trying to learn how to cook and whatnot back then, and it just kind of stuck with it. So yeah, I dabble in the kitchen.
Yeah, you did a good job with that.
Right on.
And also I had some of your takes on the YouTube special there. The QAnon and the shaman, that just killed me. That was unbelievable.
Yeah, I appreciate it. That, you know, that was one I didn't know, or well, not that I didn't know, but that part that's in, I talk a little bit about January 6th and then he comes up and everything. And it's like that, I didn't know about that becoming dated or whatever. Cause the rest of that, I try not to be, I mean, when I record anything, at least I try not to be like overly topical. Cause you know, there's no shelf life.
Absolutely.
But with like that, I was like, I mean, people are going to remember.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's not people are going to forget January 6th or that dude. He's pretty memorable. So yeah, but that was just wild. I mean, yeah, the thing you're talking about in there is that, and this is a true story, a real thing. Mm-hmm. I really did see was when he was on trial at one point, his lawyer, in a public statement, like to the press, his lawyer referred to the QAnon shaman, his client, as quote, fucking retarded. And I was like, I didn't go to law school, but I don't think you're supposed to do that. That's a bold strategy. Right.
They might tell you to say, not to say that as a comedian on stage.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I went through like, I used to have a bit where I said it, and then I started people saying like, hey, could you please not say that? And now it's like, I'm hearing from people that it's back or whatever. I've always been the type where it's like, well, if you're like quoting someone else,
absolutely, yeah, you're quoting them.
It's like, come on. That's what the dude said. Yeah. Like we're all adults here.
That's what, you know what I mean?
Like, it's not the same thing, but anyway, it is a weird situation with that word in particular. Yeah, yeah, it's like a popular thing in like LA clubs and especially in Austin and stuff, where it's like, no, we're saying it again. We're all saying it again.
The lawyer ran out of adjectives. He couldn't figure out anything else. Which is so ridiculous. And I think, you know, it was funny. We're watching, you know, we play these preview videos, you know, before the show. You'll see them this weekend, right? Next four comics coming up and you're on there. And I think somebody said this amongst the guys working there. We said, you know, his voice doesn't look like it should be coming out of that body. If people talk to you about your voice, do people say to you, oh, you know, you really need to, you know, not be as Southern, or you think you could, you know, it's going to make you more marketable if you're not that? Like, was that ever brought up by anybody in show business to you?
Yeah, not just show business, my whole life. I mean, a lot of people that like leave the South, they work very hard to lose their accents or whatever, because we're all told, like in school and stuff, or you go to college, like people will tell you, like, hey, especially if you're going to go anywhere else, you can't be talking like a cartoon possum. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to be taken seriously. You're not going to get a job. Yeah. We're told that. But I just always had a real big chip on my shoulder about it, because like, I was always like I was a smart kid, but in a dumb town, you know, the standard was lower, but I didn't know that. I had no frame of reference. Right. Mm-hmm. So I was like the smart kid in my school. And I literally thought, when I graduated high school at 18, like, I sincerely believed I was like Goodwill Hunting. Like, I was like that level of intelligence. So thinking that highly of my own intellect, I used to have the whole thing in my head of like, look, just because I sound this way don't mean anything. Right. You know, even like I sound stupid, I'm not. I'm smart. I'm smarter than you, damn it. So there's no reason for me to change. Like, I had a, you know, I had this weird relationship with it. And now it's just too far gone. I mean, now it kills me now, because I mean, I'm in LA doing comedy stuff. I get sent on auditions and stuff sometimes, and like, I can replace my accent with some other accent that I'm like a Scottish brogue or something like that. You know, slated to a different manner of speech. I can't just erase my accent and just do like a flat Iowa accent. It's like, it's definitely prohibitive for sure. But yes, no, I mean, but the thing is, I don't think I'd be talking to you right now or doing this club this weekend if I didn't. Because yes, that is the conventional wisdom. Mm-hmm. You should talk like that. It's less marketable or whatever. The whole, that juxtaposition that you said somebody on the staff noticed, like that whole thing is like, it's just my whole deal is this odd juxtaposition that doesn't seem to, to make sense. You know what I mean? So, I feel like it's worked out despite what the conventional wisdom is. Yeah. But yeah, ain't nothing I can do about it at this point.
Well, I guess, you know, I think, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago, right? The redneck comic was hot. Mm-hmm. You know, they were out there and you know, it was, you know, Engvall and Foxworthy and Larry and those guys. And then, you know, because I remember touring and I worked with a guy. You ever meet the Educated Redneck? I forgot what that guy's name was. But that was the guy. That was his gimmick. He was the Educated Redneck.
It was, do you know who Stuart Huff is?
No, I do, but that wasn't him. Yeah.
I'm about to say, he never went, but it's funny because I tell people whenever it comes up that Stuart is like, you know, I mean, he's been doing kind of what I do, but much better for way longer than me. You know, I met him early on. I love Stuart, but the Educated Redneck,
never met that guy. He lived this is all I remember about him. And it was like, he was fine. You do one nighters in Indiana together and stuff like that. But he lived in his RV. That was his thing. He was one of those road guys.
Leaning towards the redneck part more.
Yeah, he was in the RV. And most of the time you spent off stage with the Educated Redneck, he was convincing me that if I was going to go on the road, I needed an RV, which was not convincing whatsoever.
Yeah, that checks out. But, I don't know. I always, like I said, I wanted to be a stand-up from a young age. And like, at that point in time in my head, you know, because Jeff Foxworthy was huge.
Right.
You know, and even back then I was like, I've got a thing. I've kind of got it. And I'm thinking this as a teenager, way before I ever even started. I was like, you know, I sound like Jeff Foxworthy, but like the stuff I say is, you know, more like at that time, Dennis Miller or somebody.
Right, yeah, there you go.
But, you know, he was a big one for me. My dad was a huge fan of his. I love Dennis Miller. But so I thought about it that way from a very young age, and, you know, it's just part of my thing now. But yeah, that's the videos you guys are watching, the special and all that, like, if I take my glasses off and put a ball cap on, yeah, and I don't shave a little bit or whatever, like I can sort of country it up some, yeah, right, you know, right. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, but otherwise just walking around. Yeah. I don't look, my voice sounds weird coming out of my
it does
head
a little bit, but it's great. And we love it. And the other thing, I don't know if you knew this about Jeff Foxworthy, but he's told this story in interviews that you might be a redneck started in Detroit. Did you know that story?
I did not know that.
Ever heard that story?
Huge.
I'll tell you the story here a little bit as I remember him telling it, that there was a club in Detroit, and I used to play it. It's no longer around, called Chaplin's Comedy Club. And the thing about Chaplin's is it was part of a bowling alley. It was a big, it used to be a disco, and it was in a bowling alley, a huge bowling alley, and they had this comedy club. And Foxworthy was getting a hard time, you know, playing Chaplin's. He was a redneck, and he went back to the hotel after a show, and he said, these people are getting their pickup trucks valet parked at the bowling alley. So that became the first "you might be a redneck" joke. And he said he told it the next night, and from there on, that was the thing.
Yeah, no, he struck gold with that. That thing that he was picking up on there, whatever, I'm sure he was aware of it even before that. But like, there's, whether they identify themselves as such or not, in every state in this country, there's, you know, there's rural people, there's trailer Americans.
Detroit's,
you know,
absolutely that.
Yeah, right. They're
absolutely,
and they have a lot of, you know, stuff in common, even if neither side thinks, you know, even if like the ones from the South and the ones from the North wouldn't want to associate with each other necessarily.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a ton of overlap, and it's always fun, you know, pointing that out. And that's what Foxworthy was so great. Jeff Foxworthy was, in the 90s when I was a kid, I mean, he was like in my town and everything. I mean, he was the guy.
Yeah, I remember.
The number one guy.
I remember going to the truck stops when I was on the road in like the early 2000s, and all the trucker tapes with all of those guys, man. That was the number one thing. You'd go and look at the cassettes. It was all those guys, man. It was great.
Yeah, he made like, I mean, I have no idea how much, but I know, those tapes and CDs and everything that he sold at truck stops were like, you know, massive. The type of thing that just, you know, ain't ever going to happen again because those things don't even exist anymore. But
But look, you're taking today's media and you're making yourself a name for yourself with that, though. That's terrific.
Yeah, part of the irony of that is I'm still actually very dumb about it all. Like, sometimes people they'll think like, "Oh, you had kind of relatively early success with this, like using social media as a stand-up thing," and they'll want to like talk to me about it. I'm always like, "Dude, I have no, I had an idea for a thing to try, and then people liked and/or were fascinated and/or hated that thing, and then I just have kept doing that thing. That's all I do. Like, I don't know anything about metrics, analytics, all the like little rules and stuff that like, I'm not any kind of tech or internet savvy at all, despite how, you know, how important it's been to me. So
that's great, man. Yeah. You put that stuff up, people dig it, man. I enjoyed watching all that stuff, getting ready to talk to you. It's fun. Hey, Trey.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be exciting to have you here this weekend, Friday and Saturday this weekend.
Yes, sir. Yes. I'm going to see you there.
That's right. And come get your tickets, Trey. Thanks so much for talking to me today. I'm really looking forward to this weekend, and we'll see you then, buddy. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Joel. See you then.
Take care, man. Bye-bye. Hey, thanks for that, Trey. That was nice. Guy's a real pro. He's on all these shows. He comes on slumming it on this little show. But it'll be good to have him this weekend. I really enjoyed his stuff, and I know you're going, some of you might be going, I don't know, Southern comedian, but no, he's really talented, super smart guy, and I'm really looking forward to these shows this weekend. He's got a little tour of Michigan, Holland, Lansing coming up after, but Comedy Castle, of course, a big stop for so many comedians these days, so we're just privileged to have him. And come out, big week, Horace HB Standards Thursday, Trey Crowder Friday, Saturday. Detroit to LA tonight if you're listening to this on Tuesday. Open mic tomorrow. Come on, people, get with it. It's going to be what a great lineup we've had at the Comedy Castle. I was talking to our owner, Mark Ridley, last week, and I said, you know, summer's always slow for us. Didn't feel slow this year. He says, well, it wasn't slow this year. We're doing great business. So we want to thank everybody that comes to the castle, listens to this show, and is plugged into what we're doing. We really do appreciate you guys. And we'll keep it going. We're going to keep these shows coming for you with all of your headliners, the ones we can get anyway. Oh, also should plug my next advanced comedy class. How about that? October 19th on Saturday there in October the 19th. Be great if you've done the beginner comedy class. Sign up for the advanced comedy class with me. You'll learn a lot about comedy. I'll tell you some great stories like the ones I told with Trey Crowder. I don't know how great those were. But you'll learn a lot about comedy. You will have some laughs. That's October 19th. If you've never done comedy, beginner comedy class, Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. Bill Bouchard will teach you. Bill Bouchard's awesome. Take his class. You'll love it. All right, guys, let's get out of here. Let's say goodnight. Let's say goodbye. You guys got to go over to the website and get these Trey Crowder tickets before they're gone. All right? Do it. We'll see you at the club. Bye-bye.